Welcome to the Age of Identity and Public Sector podcast series. As cybersecurity continues to be a priority for the federal government, 2021 will certainly continue to be a year of significant changes, from the expected cyber executive order from the Biden administration, to the latest cyber budget, to the value of zero trust, to the rise of ICAM in importance. The government cyber landscape is very busy these days. And today we're speaking with Alma Cole, who is the Chief Information Security Officer for U.S. Customs and Border Protection, more about these topics. And Alma, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, it's great to be here with you as well. And let's start at the top. If you don't mind, tell us a little bit about the expected, I guess, draft cyber executive order from the Biden administration and how multi-factor authentication will really be coming more to the forefront with this, right?
Yeah, so it just so happens, as long as we're talking about the same executive order, that this dropped last night. And it's extensive. I think it's much larger than most people would have expected. By my count, I have 23 pages of executive order. And as I read through this, I think this is very, very much in response to SolarWinds. It is in response to how we start to wrap our arms around really the security of our supply chain when it comes to software and other services that are delivered to government. It's how we improve our own practices, whether it be how we do code development, codes delivered to the government, our own internal development, or the security of our networks. It really takes us forward, I think, in a lot of good directions. And as per usual, it also gives a lot more emphasis over to the role of CISA and, of course, NIST in trying to not only promulgate critical standards for security for things like how we secure cloud, but also putting CISA, I think, much, much more in the driver's seat again when it comes to the ability to detect and respond to threats on a federal government-wide basis.
Yeah, that's great and a perfect segue into my next question, because there's a lot going on. This executive order that just dropped, that's so funny. I didn't realize that it hit last night, so I'm going to have to do a little reading on it, or at least the latest version of it. But there's also the latest cyber budget. So there's a lot of activity happening right now that really aims to impact government network readiness. So tell us more from your perspective about the latest cyber budget and how this will help as well, along with this EO, if you will.
Right. So again, we have a lot of investment that's going to be going over to specifically to CISA. And CISA, of course, is the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency within DHS, used to be called NPPD, name changed a few years ago to really better reflect the role that they're now playing in government. And also, of course, we're speaking to you now, not only after SolarWinds, but after the very, very public hack of this pipeline. The Colonial Pipeline that's shut down. We have gas lines still for any place that still has gas in Virginia. So it's definitely something that is a forefront in everyone's mind. And cybersecurity continues to take more of a role. The Biden administration, as they come in, they definitely want to ensure that they communicate how serious cybersecurity is. I think they are doing that through a lot of dollars. So as part of some of the stimulus packages, CISA has got, I believe, an additional $650 million that they are leveraging to not only improve their workforce, but improve their capabilities, including looking at some of this next generation of how you do cloud security, and again, how you push detection down into the at the agency level, as well as the continuous diagnostic mitigation program, continuing to build that standard up. So aside from just the money that's going to CISA, and a lot of that too, looking at how they build their capabilities in the back end and better respond to, again, breaches like the SolarWinds attacks, we are seeing some opportunities through vehicles like the TMF, the Technology Modernization Fund, where agencies are able to at least put up proposals, but going back to OMB, I think it was $2 billion going to the TMF to request for funding to update a lot of their systems. That can be in a number of different areas. Originally, that was to try to get off of the legacy systems they might have that maybe are more difficult to patch and to secure. That obviously is a really, really critical step. And with those, the original idea of the Technology Modernization Fund was that there would be a loan, and that as agencies recover costs from doing their modernization and from getting off of their legacy systems, that they could pay that back. Now OMB has come out and actually said that there might be some other categories where maybe you would only have to pay back a partial amount of the TMF that we're using for modernization, especially for cybersecurity, or perhaps not even have to pay back any of it. And obviously there's details and fine print that goes along in there. But again, I don't want to say it's necessarily the floodgates are open, but there are definitely opportunities now for agencies across the federal government to really make it known what their greatest cybersecurity risks are, and to go to OMB and to really seek from the White House and OMB for funding for some of these high priority cybersecurity initiatives. And frankly, we're going to need some funding to do a lot of what is in this, going back to this executive order. So swinging back actually to that for one second. So obviously your podcast is about identity. And one of the things that does stand out, and there's a lot that's on there, a huge, heavy, heavy emphasis on secure software development. Again, that's both with software that is supplied into the government and trying to set up some sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval or something like that, some sort of a standard so you know that the software that you're getting, is up to some sort of level of security due diligence that's been done with the software. And from identity perspective, a big push, again, on multi-factor, that's not new. We did have, obviously, all of the PIV, the personal identity verification standards that we've been pushing in the government for a long time. And, PIV, those cards should be the basis for most agencies' identities today. But the previous multi-factor requirements that I had seen were really focusing on specifically on PIV. PIV is really, really great, but PIV is not the solution for everything in every place. And so, for example, we've worked for a long time on, derived credentials coming from PIV being embedded in mobile devices and having that act as a second factor. And I think you could debate about whether or not that provides more security, whether it's derived or whether it's just a trusted identity that's established on that device. Once the credentials derived, it's just PKI at that point. And so you could replicate that with a high level of trust using other means. But either way, the difference here, I think, is when I see the multi-factor as written in the EO, I see no reference in there to PIV. So I think this is perhaps a chance to modernize how we think of multi-factor authentication within the federal government to get us off of that single sort of it needs to be PIV or nothing standard, well, not or nothing, obviously, PIV only standard, and perhaps on to be able to leverage a lot more different types of factors. And also, I think I saw a reference in there to the being able to do more risk-based type authentication. So as we're looking at what factors we use, perhaps not always having to do just PIV, but being able to perhaps leverage other factors or even do multiple factors that if we're doing things like higher risk transactions. And also along with that, right next to all the multi-factor authentication discussion, you're seeing a big emphasis, of course, on data security and encryption for data at rest, and then using multi-factor to be able to access those items that are encrypted along with multi-factor within the software development supply chain as developers go through and move code through the process. So real interesting push there. So circling back to budget, one of the big ones that's in there, again, is zero trust. Easy to say, and everyone is talking about zero trust again and again and again. It's like the focus of, I would say, 75% of the cybersecurity panels that I've been asked to sit on recently. And that's the right way to go, right? Because you are now, with SolarWinds as a great use case, assuming that at some point, there's a breach, right? Assuming breach is how you architect with zero trust. And so based on that assumption that something's going to go wrong, someone's going to get in, whether that's an insider threat, whether that is, someone who's hacked into your environment, then you architect with least privilege, done to the nth degree so that you're significantly limiting the blast radius or the potential impact of a breach or a loss of security for any particular element or user or system within that environment. And you're bringing that down to the lowest amount possible. So there's a lot in here that's unsaid. It says we're going to push zero trust. It says that, NIST, I think, and CISA are going to come out with standards to promulgate that. But that is going to be a long, long journey, I think, for most agencies to get towards something that is more meaningful with that zero trust maturity. And we're going to be building on that, I think, for a number of years to come as we, you know, build some basic zero trust capabilities and then continue to refine those as we go on.
That's excellent stuff there. Appreciate those insights. In many ways, you've covered off on a lot of the core topics that I wanted to highlight today. Zero trust, ICAM, we discussed the new EO that just dropped, the budget, and there's just so much going on, as you know, and everything that you've covered today. But before we sign off today, is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed? It's a huge topic. We could probably do a podcast for a couple of hours, but just wanted to see if there's any final thoughts you might have today.
Yeah, so obviously, identity, when you talk about zero trust, and zero trust really is where we need to push very, very hard with cybersecurity in the future. The key aspect of that that cannot be overlooked, that it's really central to zero trust, is identity. It's identity both for all of your users and having, again, a very, very strong assurance that they are who they say they are, using multiple factors, as well as other intelligence about, you know, who they are, where they're coming from, where they came from in the past, the risk levels of transactions they're doing, things like that. But then we can't overlook as well the identity of all of the systems, because that's a really, really key part of the equation and another key factor in how we actually grant access into, you know, agency networks or into applications or anything else like that. So you've had some other really, really great discussions recently about how we push out and do that system level profiling and system level identity in addition to all of the user level. I'd say it's an exciting time in the identity management space. We're certainly pushing out into the cloud, and we have much, much better identity governance capabilities than we ever had in the past. And, you know, finally, we have, you know, comprehensive views of not only all of our basic users, but all of their entitlements. And really, we have our arms wrapped around this in a way that we never have before. And as we move forward, we see just much, much more potential in the future to build on what's now a very, very solid foundation, both for the machine and for user identity. And now, of course, we have a lot of the technologies. You can throw out machine learning, artificial intelligence, things like that. All these capabilities that we actually now have to overlay and implement a meaningful control plane for zero trust really across our enterprise. It's really exciting. It's still going to be a lot of work to get everything implemented in a way that provides that meaningful coverage so that we can assure that regardless of what the scenario is, that we can, you know, contain threats. But I think we're on a great, great path towards that today.
Excellent. What a great way to conclude this episode of the Age of Identity in Public Sector podcast series, where Alma Cole, the Chief Information Security Officer for U.S. Customs and Border Protection, shared his insights into a wide range of cyber topics and trends and priorities as the government cyber landscape continues to transform in 2021 and beyond. And Alma, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks again for having me.